One of my favorite things about studying God's Word is how that it doesn't matter how much you've studied it. It doesn't even matter how much you may have studied a particular text. You'll study it one day and you'll see something you haven't seen before. Or you'll understand something and connect it to something else in the Bible that you've never connected it to or understood before. And those are times for me where I get kind of excited. Because when I connect it to something else or I see something I haven't seen before, it opens all the doors for how that impacts everything. How that might be found in other places. That same thought might be illustrated in other ways. And it's just, it opens up a lot of study for me. And I really enjoy that. Also, I just enjoy, you know, when I find stories in the Old Testament that I, you know, for the life of me, knowing I've read those texts, why do I not remember this? You know, this time I read it and it's like, wow, that's kind of cool. And yet, surely I've read it before. I took classes. I've taught classes pretty much on all of it. And so, you know, it's kind of one of those things you go, what happened to it? Where'd it go? Now, Kurt just says we're getting old, and that's what happens to us, right? I don't know if that's it, but in your Bibles, open to 2 Kings chapter 13, verses 20 through 21. And I have said from the pulpit, so I guess Steve Simpson's trying to get me to admit that I'm wrong on something I said. He's probably going to win that one. And so I probably will once I get that all worked out. But, I so love when people are studying their scriptures and they ask me the questions, and sometimes it may not match up because sometimes I do miss things. And I told someone this week at camp, one of the young men, I said, hey, it doesn't bother me for you to correct me. If I mess something up and you correct me, I appreciate that. I think you're doing a great job. And I've been corrected by a 10-year-old before, and he was right. And so, you know, it's not a preaching the gospel should never be a pride issue. It's not a pride issue. It is let's get it right issue. And so, you know, here at 2 Kings chapter 13 and verses 20 through 21, we see you've probably heard me say before, is that there was only two times that someone was raised from the dead in the Old Testament. Elisha with the widow's son, and as well as Elijah raising a widow's son. And so, you know, two resurrections, but that's not so. And I've said that from the pulpit I don't know how many times. I mean, it's not going to affect anybody's salvation. I don't think anybody's going to wind up one day lost going, I wish Nathan had told me correct on that resurrection thing. But, you know, we want to get it right. I was reading, looking for another text, and I was just kind of scanning through this book, and I came across this, and it just kind of struck me. It said, Elisha died, and they buried him. This is verse 20. Now the bands of the Moabites would invade the land in the spring of the year, and as they were burying a man, behold, they saw a marauding band, and they cast the man into the grave of Elisha. And when the man touched the bones of Elisha, he revived and stood up on his feet. So here you got, you know, we get the statement that Elisha dies. In fact, previous to this statement, we see that Elisha is sick. He is dying. And he goes ahead and he dies. And they bury him. Now, there's an indeterminate amount of time that passes between the time that they bury him and the time that this next part of the story takes place. These two things are not happening synonymously with each other, but there is a time frame here that passes. And there is another burial going on there. And a lot of times in these sepulchres and these tombs, because everybody couldn't have their own cave, okay? When they buried them in tombs, you know, they tended to be able to put a few bodies in each of these tombs, and then they would come back later. After the body had completely decomposed, and they'd take all the bones out of that particular person, put them in a little stone box, and they would bury that. It's called an ossuary. And we've had debates in recent years over ossuaries that have been found in the Palestine area. And we even have Caiaphas's. Caiaphas's bones, the Caiaphas that we read of in the New Testament, his bones we have because they have found his ossuary. You'd write on the ossuary who it was. You remember a few years ago there was the whole thing where they had the one that they claimed said James, the brother of, or the son of Joseph, a brother of Jesus. And so, that turned out not to be exactly accurate, but, you know, there was a big deal made about that, whether it was the brother of Jesus Christ, the writer of the book of James. But it appears that it was not. Well, here we have Elisha here, and so they're burying this other man, and they see a roving band, probably maybe even in the same tomb. They see this roving band, and they're going to go take cover. So you get this idea, they just kind of tossed him in, right? Kind of lost all ceremony about it, you know, when you're worried about getting killed. And they toss his body in there, and it touches the bones of Elisha, or Elisha, rather. And when it touches the bones, he comes back to life. and stands up. So that's the third person to rise from the dead in the Old Testament. If you know of a fourth, please let me know. Because until you show me the fourth, I'm going to start saying, hey, there's only three. Interesting thing that I found about this story is it just kind of stops there. He was revived and he stood up, and the story moves on. And it, no reference back to this, nothing about this. It's just on to the next narrative in regards to the kings, king of Israel. And so, you know, why tell us this? Why is it set out here all by itself, just kind of a story that is thrown at us, and it's two verses quick, and it's done? Well, I think there's a couple of things that we could think about. Number one, I think we think about the fact that prophets were men that were to be respected because of their messages of God. And God showed them, you know, demonstrated the need for people to respect these prophets. And even in this particular case, respecting, you know, the bones of Elisha, that the power of God still existed there upon this great prophet of God as they threw this body into the grave. Let's think about instances where prophets were clearly supposed to be respected and they were not. Go back to 2 Kings chapter 1. And we read that Ahaziah, he fell through some lattice work. And he was on his bed and he asked, you know, he wanted some men to go and to consult Baalzebub, a king of Ekron, whether or not he was going to live. Now you can imagine, here is the king of Israel, and he is wanting his men to go and consult a pagan idol about whether he's going to live or not. And so God comes to Elijah, and he says, "Is it because there is no God in Israel?" This is verse 3. "Is it because there is no God in Israel that the king is going to go and ask about this from this pagan god whether he's going to live?" I mean, it's God going, "They not realize I'm still around? Is it because they think there's no God? Is it because they think I'm not around anymore that they're going to go and consult Baalzebub?" He says, "Let me tell you what you do, Elijah. You go and you intercept those messengers and you tell them, no, he's not going to live. And you send them back to him." So he does just that. And when they come back, the king goes, "What are you doing back so soon?" And they go, "Well, a guy intercepted us on the road and told us this, told us to go back to you and tell you this." And he said, "Describe him for me." And they describe Elijah. You know, he's kind of a rough feller. And the king goes, "It's Elijah." He knew who it was. And so he sends his men. He says, "I want him to come to me." And so he sends this captain with 50 men. And Elijah now is just kind of sitting on a hilltop. And these 50 men come up and he says, "You come down, you go see the king." In fact, exactly, he says, "O man of God, thus says the king, come down." And Elijah says, "If I am a man of God," okay, because, you know, we're getting the implication here that Elijah knows this guy doesn't think he's a man of God, doesn't look to him as a man of God, because if he really believed he was a man of God, he wouldn't be treating him like he is. He says, "If I'm a man of God, let fire come down from heaven and consume you and your 50. Fire comes down from heaven, consumes the captain and his 50 men. Second captain comes, and this time he says basically the same thing. "O man of God, thus says the king." And he doesn't say, "Just come down." He says, "Come down quickly." Coming out there and making demands from the prophet of God. And Elijah says the same thing. "Oh, if I am a man of God, let fire come down from heaven and consume you and your men." Fire came down from heaven and consumed that man and his 50 men. Third guy, I don't know how much God consumed them, whether they were completely consumed or whether there's 102 burnt carcasses around them. That would certainly open your eyes, I guess. But the third captain of 50 in verses 13 through 14 comes up and says, "Oh, man of God, please let my life and the lives of these 50 servants of yours be precious in your sight." Oh, that's a different tune, isn't it? It's not, "Hey, you get down here." That's, you know, it falls down at his feet. He says, "We're your servants. Let us be precious in your sight." And I love it because the angel of the Lord says, "Okay, you can go with him. You'll be saved." And so he goes and he sees the king. And he tells the king he's going to die. And he does. The text goes on to say, and he did. So, you see, these men did not show the prophet of God the respect that they should have shown him. And as a result, God in his power demonstrated the need for them to have done that. In 2 Kings chapter 2 and verse 24, we see Elisha. And Elisha was obviously like some of us. His hair was getting a little thinner than the rest. And some young boys were calling him Baldy Baldy. Not showing the prophet of God the respect that they should show. And God brought two she-bears, or two female bears, and destroyed the 42 young men as a result of their lack of respect. 2 Kings chapter 6, the king of Aram comes against the nation of Israel. And he loses the battle, and he's basically asking, why is this happening? And his advisor said, because of Elisha, the prophet of God. He is telling the king of Israel what you say in your bedroom at night. He knows it all. And that's why you can't win. Because he knows exactly what you're going to do before you do it. So he decides he's going to go, and he's going to do away with, or capture at least, Elisha. He finds out what city he's in, that he's in the city of Dothan. And, you know, this is that great story where Elisha's servant comes out in the morning and he sees the army of Aram around the city, and he's all panicky and he runs in and says, oh, Elisha, they're all around us. They're all around us. Elisha prays, oh God, open his eyes that he may see. And he opens up his eye, and now the man looks around, and there's still the army of Aram, but surrounding the army of Aram is the army of God, flaming horses and chariots surrounding him. God was there. And Elisha prayed, and God struck that army with blindness. So it's a very interesting story, because then Elisha leads this army, this blind army, right to the middle of Samaria. Right to the middle of the heart of the country, right to the capital. And he brings them before the king of Israel. King of Israel says, you want me to kill them all? He goes, no, don't kill a single one of them. You make a feast for them. Feed them. And they feed them, and their sight's restored, and they return home. And the Bible tells us that at least for a time, Aram did not attack Israel anymore. It's going to be kind of hard to get your army to attack someone that just treated you like that, right? Number one, you go, I might go on and get struck blind again. Didn't like that experience. Number two, they were pretty nice to us when we did receive our sight back. Really don't want to go and attack them. Just not going to have their hearts in it, I don't think. And so at least for a time while those men were still in the army, attacking Israel was kind of off the table. You know, we should always respect those that proclaim what the will of God is. God has always seemed to expect such. I'm not talking about preachers necessarily, just preachers. I'm talking about anyone, any child of God that proclaims or speaks in a thus saith the Lord or tells us what God has told us in the Bible. That person should be respected for their willingness to teach the gospel of Jesus Christ. You know, we can look and we can see that at other times these things have been true. You look at Moses with Aaron and Miriam when they said, hey, we're just as good as Moses. No, you're not. You show him respect, Aaron. You show him respect, Miriam. You come up into the New Testament and in the book of Acts, and you see Paul as he is contending with Elymas. And there comes a point where Elymas apparently crosses the line, right? And Paul has him struck blind for a time because of the way that he is treating the Apostle Paul. So God has always done that. God exerting this kind of power, though, in our story as we think back to Elisha in that his bones in that tomb and coming back to life. You know, you kind of get this idea that God is saying what Elisha said still is powerful, still needs to be heard, still needs to be followed, still needs to be listened to, right? I mean, he's dead, he's not there anymore, but let me tell you something. What he said, I'm still there with him. And his words are still words you need to obey. And so, you know, it seems that God is exerting power in this story to show that they should continue in Elisha's teaching because he still exuded the power of God. I want us to think about this from a personal standpoint for us and how we may have the touch of life. Those bones kind of had the touch of life, didn't they? I mean, you touch them and the man came to life. Number one, a person who is speaking what God says brings life, spiritual life, to those they come into contact with. to those that they touch. Matthew chapter 5, verse 16, where it tells us to let our light so shine before men that others may see our good works and glorify the Father which is in heaven. You see, there's something in that connotation of letting our light shine that at the end of it, they know who God is. And not only do they know who God is, but they are able to call upon Him with in the right way. And so, you know, there is something there that we bring life to that situation by the light that we shine in our lives. We can bring life, and that light certainly would also include teaching them the gospel, life-giving gospel of Jesus Christ. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 1, the Apostle Paul says, "And you were dead in your trespasses and sins, in which you formerly walked according to the course of this world." And in verse 6, it says that He raised us up with Christ. So we were dead in sin, but we've been raised up in Christ. And so when we bring people to the gospel, we bring them to the life-giving power of it. Being in sin is to be dead spiritually. And we bring life to them by them coming into contact with us and coming in contact with the gospel that we can provide to them. We bring them to Jesus Christ, who is the resurrection and the life. You know, someone has to bring that word of life to a person to accomplish this. They must touch the lives of people around them. They must touch those who are dead so that they may return to life by the power of Jesus Christ, who is the source of all life. John chapter 1 and verse 4, it says that the Word was life. That Word is literally the source. It wasn't given to Him. He is where it comes from. So we provide that to them. Someone, you might say, did this for me. Someone taught me, someone led me to Christ, and every one of us probably have that story. Someone did it for me. Someone did it for you. Someone touched your life with the faith of Jesus Christ that they knew and shared it with you. And you were able to come to Christ and know life as well. So they had the touch of life in your life. And we need to, you know, I guess staying with our analogy of the story, we need to toss people toward Christ, don't we? He's not a dead body. He's raised, right? But we do, you know, we do visit the death of Christ, do we not? Every Sunday morning. And we do that to give us ourselves life, to remember what He did for us in His death, in His burial and His resurrection. But we toss people toward Christ that they might be able to live. You know, you will be surprised if you just direct people toward Christ, if you just be that person that makes it clear to people what they need to do, that they need Jesus Christ. You'd be surprised what will happen, just as I'm sure those men that day when they tossed that body into that tomb were pretty surprised when it stood up. You know, second and last of all, a person's power to bring people to life outlives them in this world. This is literally where we become like Elisha. We become like his bones. You know, Elisha was dead, and his bones brought a person back to life. You know, there is a legacy of truth and righteousness that will have a lasting effect. I never knew, because I was not even born when my great-grandfather passed away, but I've heard my dad talk about him and his 70 years of preaching the gospel and the congregations that he started. I've seen pictures of him in a book called Arkansas Angels. It's a book filled with all the great preachers of the early 20th century, and he's one of them. And there's a picture of him in there, and I've heard the things he said and the things he taught and the way that he taught things. And, you know, I've heard that, and it's had an impact on my life, had an impact on my preaching, had an impact on me wanting to preach. And so I never knew the man was not even alive when he was alive, and yet he still impacts me to this very day. And so there is a legacy of truth and righteousness there that carries on. You know, and for you, it may be someone, it may be a mother or a father or a friend that, and they may have left this life already, but they still influence your life to be right. You think about them and you think, I want to still be like them. They expected so much out of me spiritually. They tried to get me to be everything that I could be for God. And every day you hear their voice. Every day you see their example. Even though they haven't been on this earth for some time, you still hear them and see them and are influenced by them because of their righteousness. You're still touching them and receiving life within your own heart and mind. We have that impact. Have something that exists and lives on past us and impacts people past us. You know, these people give us life spiritually in that they push us closer and closer to Jesus Christ. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 4 tells us a very similar thing. It says that Abel was righteous, in that by faith he offered a more excellent sacrifice. But it also tells us, though he be dead, yet he speaks. Right? None of us ever knew Abel. Abel's been dead a very, very long time. And yet, we can still draw faith and life from Abel. He still speaks to us about faith and about doing things God's way. And that impacts our lives. In fact, the great men in Hebrews chapter 11 that we just finished studying, they were all dead, yet chapter 12 calls them a cloud of witnesses that directs us in our lives to focus upon Jesus Christ, who is the way, the truth, and the life. So when we give ourselves to knowing these great men and women of faith, we throw ourselves literally into their tombs, and we come into contact with their bones, we will be given life by following their examples, because their examples lead us closer to God. Those people that have died and still influence us set an example for us. I guess the question is my life one that will continue to have impact on people when I'm not living on this earth any longer? And I guess the answer is fairly simple. If I'm not having an impact on anybody when I'm alive, it's highly unlikely I'm going to have any impact on people when I'm dead. The reason why those people impact us, those mothers and fathers, friends, grandfathers, is because they impacted us when they were alive, or they impacted the people. My grandfather impacted my dad, and my dad impacts me with the same thing. But the people, somebody was impacted. Is my life one that impacts the people around me, or am I just in their lives, or am I impacting their lives? Am I making a difference in their lives? Bringing them closer to Christ. Bringing them closer to life. Because that's the only way at the end of the day that my legacy will be one of righteousness. That my legacy will be one that will continue to bring people to Christ long after I have become bones and dust upon this earth. Now, are we doing that? Are we bringing the life that Jesus gives to those that are spiritually dead? Are we giving them spiritual life? Does the life that you live or that you are living show Christ so powerfully that even when you die, it will still be bringing life to those who come in contact with it? You know, we can bring life as we join up with Jesus Christ. He is the life. And we can have a legacy of life by having our lives given completely and totally to Him. And all that requires, it requires for us to do that is to give our lives totally. That I sacrifice my life and have His. When I do that, it will live on. And I will live on in eternity with God. This evening, if you're not a child of God, we hope and pray that you will make the decision to become one. To make your life one that is given to Christ. A life that will impact people not only in this life as you live it faithfully for Him, but a life that will continue to have impact long after. You can do that by obeying the gospel of Jesus Christ. Are you a child of God? As you look at your life, do you think, I'm not really doing much of anything? That if I died today, I haven't really made much of an impact. I'm not going to make much of an impact afterwards. You can change that. There's no reason for that to continue to be the case. And Christ wants you to make an impact. And there's no reason why you can't. Determine today to change and to live your life with all of your being to bring life to those that are dead. If we can assist you this evening in your spiritual life, we want to help you. Why don't you come as we stand and as we sing.